This is Radio Boston. I'm Yasmeen Ammer, in for Tiziana Deering. We start today in the boardroom, where the number of women holding the title of chief operating officer at the state's 75 biggest public companies has doubled since 2019. The bad news is that number went from 3 to a whopping 6. That's according to new data from the EOS Foundation, a Massachusetts philanthropic nonprofit that publishes reports on gender and racial disparities in leadership. So, why aren't women getting these roles? And how can we support more of them across race, ethnicity, and age? To talk more about this, we have two guests in studio. Andrea Silbert is the president of the EOS Foundation and co-author of the report. Thank you so much for being here, Andrea.
It's my pleasure.
And Pam Reeve. She is the chair of the board American Tower Corporation. She's also a former CEO, president, and chief executive officer herself of Lightbridge, Inc. Pam, welcome.
Nice to see you.
Andrea, start with you. I want to know the main takeaways of the report. And since you co-authored the report, did anything jump out at you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We've had things jumping at us since we first started our reporting. The Women's Power Gap started reporting in 2018. And what jumped out at us is that women, as you said, women are only 6% of the CEOs among the largest 75 public companies in Massachusetts, yet they're 20% of what we call the launch positions, which includes chief operating officers, presidents, heads of sales, heads
so
of divisions.
So these are the positions you hold right before you're supposed to just launch
like
into.
The pool. That's the pool that that boards and search committees are using to select the CEOs. So what gives, really? You know, what gives? Why would you have 20%? While it's still a small percentage, it's more than double the 8%.
Yeah, and double.
Yeah, and so the women are qualified and ready, but something's going on in that last step. We call it sort of this final drop. You're at the top, you're ready, you're poised, but you've got this drop.
Pam, let's get your thoughts on this. You made it. spoiler alert. But I want to know if you've read some parts of the report and, you know, anything surprising to you.
Sadly, there wasn't really anything terribly surprising to me. I think more disappointing, to particularly to see that launch information. You'd expect that someone who has experience running a P&L, whether it's as a president, a division president, or a chief operating officer, would be well qualified to sit in the CEO seat. So seeing that kind of, seeing any kind of a drop, but seeing that drop, I found a little bit discouraging.
Can you define what a P&L is?
Oh, profit and loss statement. So someone who's responsible for bringing in the revenue, managing the cost, managing the investment so there's profitability in the business.
So you understand the numbers. You ideally should be able to run that company, but it's just not happening for women.
And you're making the decisions that are strategic and have impact on the financial performance of the company. That's not to say that staff people aren't really important and don't play a role, but ultimately, as the P&L lead, the buck stops with you, so to speak.
Can I stick with you for just a second? Because I want to dive into your own experience. I mean, if you have adjectives to describe it, go ahead. But I do want to know, what were the biggest obstacles for you, if you had any, in reaching that CEO position? What was your experience like?
Well, it was a long time ago, and I think I was a little bit naive. I think I was a little bit oblivious to what was going on around me in some ways. When you're starting a company, which is what I did, so I started a company, your head's down working really, really hard, and it's only upon reflection, either days after an incident happened or moments after something was said, that I realized, That's interesting that somebody made that kind of a comment, or that was a little bit harder than I expected.
Do you have any specific examples of something that you keep referring back to?
Well, when I was fundraising, for example, I found that my CFO and I, who's a man, would go to raise funds. It's always hard to raise money for a startup. It's not easy for anyone. But I found sometimes that the potential investors were asking a whole lot more questions of him than of me. And I was the CEO. I was running the company, so that was a little bit strange. I also once Lightbridge was up and running, and we had actually gotten to be maybe around, I want to say about $100 million in revenue. I had some vendors come in for a software project, and I had in the room myself, my COO, my head of consulting, and a bunch of engineers. There were about 10 of us, and 4 or 5 were women. And then this big company came in to make their pitch. And as we were walking them out of the room after the pitch, the senior person who was an SVP at that company said, "Wow, you have an awful lot of women in your company." And I thought, would you have said that to a man?
How did he say it?
Surprised and, yeah, surprised. It's like it's not something he wasn't used to.
Yeah. Wow. So it's interesting, and I'm sure you have a lot of those moments to reflect on. But here I do want to go to sound from Colleen Richards-Powell. She's the Senior Vice President and Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at the American Tower Corporation. And I want to play sound from her reflecting on a moment in her past when she was looking for advice on moving up in her career.
Many of the women that I spoke to who were at a later stage in their career said to me, "Well, it depends on when you're going to have kids and when are you going to have kids. And, you know, we got to plan when you're going to have kids, and we need to plan the kids, and you need to have the kids." And I said, "Well, you know, I'm not really focused on having children right now. I'm really focused on my career." And they kind of couldn't hear it. I thought of it as the dancing baby from Ally McBeal. And I thought, you know, this would be really great if this were my goal, because they would really help me. But right now I feel like I need to get into a more financially stable position before I can think about taking care of this phantom baby who's following me around. I think that they knew what they were thinking at that stage in their careers, and I think to some degree they were projecting that onto me. What I appreciate is that they put it on the table and they gave me an open door to talk about that. But what I wish had happened was that they were able to hear that that wasn't what my focus was at that point, and that they were able to give me advice despite that, and to say, okay, if that's not your focus, let's think about something else.
And 2 points if you got that Ally McBeal reference. It was of its time. But let me pose this question to you first, Andrea. Have there been moments in your own career where you've been challenged in your efforts to advance?
Yeah. I mean, I started off my career on Wall Street in 1986. Mm. So in the mergers and acquisitions department of Morgan Stanley. So I was like in the pit of challenges for anybody that looked other, whether you're a woman or whether you're a person of color, but particularly women, you know, in very charged, male-dominated environments, a lot of testosterone. So what my first experience was that they kept staffing me on projects that were called sell side. So you would be selling a company, which created a lot more human relations. You didn't really run the spreadsheets. And on the buy side, they'd say, "Oh, this company wants to buy that company. Can you sit and run the spreadsheets and do the run the numbers?" And I was a numbers person. I'm a data wonk. And they just said, "Well, you have such a great personality. We don't want to give you the numbers. We'll give that to the boys." And because I had been brought up where my mom's a physician and she worked, I hadn't experienced that. I thought they were joking. And I said, "Oh my God, you actually think I can't do math?" Mm. And I insisted, and I won the battle.
You insisted. Mm.
I but remember, yeah, since that time, I've pretty much never worked for anybody else. I've just been an entrepreneur myself.
Wow. And Pam, can I go to you? What advice or support, you know, would you give companies that are thinking about diversifying, actually, like following the lead and hiring more women in leadership positions?
Well, first of all, I would never have that conversation that poor Colleen had. I think that was like a throwback to the 1800s. I think that if we are serious about having a representation of all the best talent, mm-hmm, and not having any artificial barriers to the best talent in our companies, and we're not there now, I don't see why we don't treat that like any other strategic imperative in our company. We set an objective, we set a goal, we set milestones, we pay people for it, we measure ourselves, we put it out there. We would never allow activity to substitute for performance the way we do on this topic. We say, "Oh, we sent yumpy up number of women to these programs. We had an ERG. We had this. We had that." And let that suffice for progress. So I would say, first of all, treat it damn seriously. How about it? You have to have the leadership behind it, not because they feel they ought to, but because it makes all kinds of sense for the business. It does morally as well, but for the business. And then you have a real program to get it done.
Can you define ERG? Because I know you just
It's an employee resource group.
Gotcha.
There are groups for different cohorts within companies, women, people of color, so on and so forth. Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about women in leadership and why it's so hard to get to positions like CEO and president. We have with us Andrea Silbert, president of the EOS Foundation, and Pam Reeve. She's the chair of the board of American Tower Corporation. I want you to address a little bit of pushback, because I've actually seen this a lot. And one of the most prominent pushback is this idea of lean in. I'm sure you've heard Sheryl Sandberg say, it's not really on companies as much as it is on the individual women to actually, you know, basically lean in, as her the title of her famous book suggests. It's just go in there and make yourself the CEO and prove that you could do the work. So I want to hear, starting with you, Andrea, yeah, what do you think about that? Is there some level of truth to it?
Not much. And I think she's backed off of that a lot. With the lean in. I mean, basically, the way I think about it is companies need to have inclusion. We're not asking for special preferences. We're just saying if you create a company that creates the opportunities for anybody to be a CEO, people can just, you know, instead of having to push women up over walls, they can just walk across and become. And that's the same for all sorts of people. And this drop, which we've seen, this final drop, from the launch, from the COO to the CEO in this case, it's unconscious bias. So there are so many things companies can do to create more inclusive environments. They can have the chief human resource officer sit in the selection meetings. And when they hear words that really tend towards generalizations, like they'll say things like, oh, well, that guy has so much potential. Well, the woman might be more qualified, but people see themselves, you know. People like to hire people who look like themselves. Well, he has so much potential. So then a CHRO might say, a chief human resource officer would say, wait, tell me more about potential, you know, and you got to get rid of these subjective words.
So actually, just speaking on that, I want to go to a quote from Colleen Richards-Powell again. Again, she's the Senior Vice President and Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer at American Tower Corporation. Here's what she had to say about whose job it is to ensure diversity among management.
We need to be cross-sectional and intersectional in terms of our development strategy. It's not only the job of women and people of color to recruit and retain people like themselves. One of the things that I really liked about the report is that it said that every CEO is the chief diversity officer, as is the executive leadership team. So it's everybody's job, no matter what your demographic is, to cultivate a diverse slate of leadership and to be an example of empowerment and inclusive leadership as you lead by example.
So, Pam, you just gave advice for companies looking to diversify, but there's this idea of, like, this is just yet another something I have to do, another goal to put through. Like, what? How do you rewire existing CEOs, existing leadership? How do you rewire? Is it just like a slow process? Like, how do you fight against the pushback of, like, well, it's not up to me to do this?
Right. So I want to go back to your prior question, if I could, for just a second, and say, you know, I interviewed Sheryl when she produced that book when she was here in Boston, and I pushed at her about the fact that she wanted women to fix themselves, which I think is completely ludicrous. But I would answer your question saying both and. We need to do, as women and people of color, the best we can in the environment that we're in to be strong, to have a voice, to present ourselves. At the same time, we need the environment to change, because if we wait for the environment to change, we'll all have great-grandchildren before all of these things change. But to your point about how do you change within a company, I think it's an air game and a ground game. The air game is the set of principles, the statements from the CEO, the money that is put forward in compensation, you know, that you're going to be measured on making some progress in these areas. Those are kind of air game things. And the ground game is on training and open conversations. Some of them are small conversations where people have to face their own biases, and some of them are big. They're training programs. I think you have to act on all of those things in order to have a chance of making a change. But I would say probably at least as important as any of those things is I want to challenge a little bit the way you opened that question, which is it's yet another thing on my plate. When Colleen came into American Tower, there were a couple of things that I thought were really important. One, that she report to the CEO. So that made a very strong statement to the organization about how important this role was and how important it was to the CEO. And then secondly, as Colleen and I were talking early on, and she would have done this anyway, I think, but I urged her to always tie what she was doing to the business. Always tie it to the business. If you make it something separate, something sort of out there, something that those people out there in the world are asking us to do or pressuring us to do, even though many people think it's the right and moral thing, it's going to be hard to get it imported into the company. But if you tie it to who we are as a company, how we succeed as a company, how we attract and retain the talent that we need, et cetera, you have a much better chance of really changing the environment so we don't have to have these conversations. It'll just be the way we do business.
Like, we've just got to. Can I ask y'all a personal question? And let me start with you, Pam. Because we heard about this idea, and I'm asking this as a mom. At some point, you know, how do you balance? Have you ever felt like you had to balance family life? And if you really wanted that position up top, like, did anybody ever make you feel like as a mom you would have to step back a little bit?
I think that life is full of trade-offs every day, every week, every month. Everybody makes them, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And you balance that out. I have to say, in my career, there were times when I felt I was spending, I'm air quoting here, you can't see it, too much time on the work, but the work required, especially running a company.
Yeah.
But I always had sort of holy time, you know, that could not be invaded unless the building was burning down, you know, or our largest investor decided to pull out or something like that to be with family. And I think that it's important for your kids to see you doing that and to see that that's part of your whole you. It doesn't mean that it's not stressful sometimes, and it doesn't mean that sometimes they're not really, really hard and you don't get a lot of sleep, especially those early days. Young kids, it's kind of a crazy time. But I think everyone has trade-offs. And, you know,
what men and women, like you said.
I was just going to say.
I know it's a question, and I'm very mindful of this question because it is not asked of men very often.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I did want to know, like, just honestly, like, did people make you feel awkward about it, guilty about it, just throughout your career while you were trying to do both? You were trying to be your best when it comes to family and be your best when it comes to career.
I would say what I noticed more was people would say, well, how do you do it all? But to the guys, I would say often they were heroes if they left work to go to a soccer game and then came back to work. I think we're in a little bit healthier time now.
Yes,
that
thank goodness.
Dads can be dads a little bit more than they could in the past. Yeah. But certainly back then, it was not the case.
Yeah, I'd like to just say that my mom and dad were the greatest role models. They're both physicians. They spent their careers working for the government at the VA. They made the exact same salary. So I always thought that was normal. And my mom was busier at night. My dad couldn't cook to save his life, but he would order pizza. My dad stepped up. He was the ultimate feminist. And he always said, you know, there were four of us. He said, if your mom didn't work, we wouldn't have the money to send you all to college. Like, we need this. And we were so proud. So we didn't really know anything different. My father stepped up. And they didn't have a nanny or, you know, a live-in. Mm-hmm. We did often at times have someone that would come at the end of the day. But, yeah, it was my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's it's not just talk. It's also a lot of action. So I want to thank you both. Andrea Silbert, she is the president of the EOS Foundation and a co-author of that report. And Pam Reeve, she is the chair of the board of American Tower Corporation and former CEO. Thank you so much for being with us, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to see you.